Hey gang, are you in a band in Austin? You're looking to make the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art, affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, plenty of parking, and wide gallery-lit corridors, they have the space for you to get your creative endeavors underway. Just like today's guest, Jeremy Nail. I saw him in there doing pre-production for his album My Mountain with Alejandro Escovedo last year. Yeah, just call him at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. In fact, today's show is a very special show to me. My guest is my dear, dear, dear friend, the extremely talented Jeremy Nail, whose brand new album, My Mountain, comes out tomorrow, Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. It is an amazing album produced by Alejandro Escovedo, mixed by Jim Scott, features the talents of Bobby Daniel on bass, Chris Masterson on the guitar, Chris Searles on the drums, Eleanor Whitmore, beautiful backing vocals and some strings, Jazz Mills, Dana Falconberry, the great Stephen Barber, and even yours truly, me. I make a special appearance singing backup on a song. So, Jeremy's album comes out tomorrow. It's called My Mountain. It is an amazing endeavor because Jeremy has lived through some pretty intense shit over the last few years. He had cancer in his knee. He had radiation therapy. And then the cancer came back, and he had his leg amputated. And Jeremy's a young guy, man. That's a very serious disease to have in your late 20s, early 30s. And anyway, Jeremy is a fantastic guy. This album is absolutely beautiful. They did such a great job of making it. And Jeremy did such an amazing job of pouring his heart out into these songs and telling his story. You can get the album on iTunes. You'll be able to find it on Spotify probably. You can pick it up physically this Friday, May 6th at Strange Brew. If you're in Austin, he's doing a record release show. So go to jeremynail.com, find out what you need to do to go see him, what you need to do to pick up My Mountain. You can pre-order it today if you're listening to the podcast. You'll have it tomorrow morning in your thing, Tuesday, May 3rd. Pick it up, My Mountain, a gorgeous, amazing album. What an endeavor. Congratulations to my man, Jeremy. Okay. You know, Jeremy and I were in a band called Liars and Saints a few years ago with Pally Palladino, Joe Hummel, Casey Crowley. We had a lot of fun doing that band. We wrote a lot of great songs together, and Jeremy and I had a great bond. Still do, I think. I connected with him in a very unique way. I have an incredible amount of respect for him, a ton of love for him. And we wrote some really beautiful, some of my favorite songs that I've ever written, I wrote with Jeremy. So, you know, he's this very special person to me. So this is a very special podcast. And in fact, here's an even higher level of specialness to this podcast. He and I, like when I first decided to do the podcast, he came over swimming one day with some friends. We were going to have some daiquiris and pina coladas in the pool and just enjoy it. And when Jeremy got here, I was like, hey man, before we go swimming, I'm thinking about starting this podcast. Would you sit down with me and do this podcast? And he's like, sure. So we sat down and we did it. Now, it was terrible. Not on Jeremy's part, but on my part. I didn't know what I was doing. And it was kind of a month before I actually started, a month or 6 weeks maybe before I actually started the first podcast. So he was episode zero. It never came out. I don't know what I did with it. I know I had the recording here because I listened to it a few times to kind of see what it was that I was doing wrong. And I was really aggressive. I talked over him. I guess I still kind of do that now, but I think I listen a little bit better. And I stopped talking like this when I was doing the intros, which is really important. I don't know if you go back and listen, the first like maybe 20, I talk like it's the end of the world or something. Like it's the saddest thing I've ever done. Anyway, I'm glad that almost 500 episodes later, Jeremy and I got to sit down after he had made this amazing record, My Mountain, which comes out tomorrow, May 3rd. Get on iTunes, pre-order it today, produced by Alejandro Escovedo, mixed by the great Jim Scott. If you're in Austin, go to his release show this Friday, May 6th at Strange Brew. He will be playing with his band Bobby Daniel, Chris Masterson, Eleanor Whitmore, and Chris Searles. Amazing group of people. And this album is fantastic. Pick it up. Do it. If you are in San Antonio on Friday, May 6th, come on out and see my band Skyrocket. We'll be playing there at Sam's Burger Joint. We have a great time playing there. Don't just love the burgers and onion rings there. We also love playing the shows there. It's a great stage. It's a great crowd. We have a nice energy exchange with the crowd that goes on there. It's a very special thing that happens there. So come on out. Do that. But if you're in Austin, definitely go to Strange Brew this Friday, May 6th. See My Mountain record release with Jeremy Nail. All right, sit back. This is a great conversation. It gets heavy, but we have some good laughs, and I think you get the idea of our friendship. I enjoy Jeremy Nail's company. I absolutely love his music. I love his songwriting. I love his voice. I love his guitar playing. And I count him as one of my closest friends. I do. I love him very much. So enjoy my conversation with the extremely talented and just wonderful human being, Jeremy Nail. Let's get down.
Great.
Oh yeah,
love it.
It's a good headphone. So after you, how long did you spend like writing, planning, recording?
I started writing the songs last year was 2015.
Yeah. Well, I remember we did a show together at Strange Brew.
That's right.
2014, like in August, and you were playing some new songs.
Yes, I had just started writing the record, and I played some of those songs that night.
Right.
And the summer of 2014, I got on this big, like, I went a long time without writing, and I think I was, for whatever reason, songs just started to just pour out
for
of
whatever
me.
Reason.
Yeah, I don't know. It just
well, when you go through something heavy, I guess, like, once you get a chance to sort of start processing.
Yeah, it took
a while.
Is
that like when it does? Yeah. Cuz when did you have your leg amputated?
I had it amputated November 2014. But I had a sarcoma tumor in my leg removed in 2012.
Right.
Yeah, 2012.
Right.
So,
right, right.
So going through that first round of surgery, I didn't have to do chemo, luckily, but I did radiation.
What is the difference? That chemo is like a chemical that goes inside of you, and the radiation is something they shoot into you.
They shoot it. They didn't shoot it
direct.
They didn't shoot it into me, but it was localized, and I laid on this table. I went in every day, 5 days a week. And they had this big machine that kind of floats over you, and then it just, and then it just kind of heats up on whatever part of your body that needs radiation, and it goes for about 3.5 minutes each time, about as long as a pop song. and I did like 7 weeks of that.
7 weeks of like 3.5 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, it's kind of like getting a big sunburn. Well, luckily I didn't have to do it on my upper body. Right. And that really, really takes it out of you at that point. But on just for it being my leg, I had some fatigue, but in comparison to what I saw in the waiting room and what other people are going through. Mine was really minimal. It was really not that big of a deal.
It's so interesting perspective, you know, because like someone that's never had anything like that, It's hard to imagine someone saying like, oh, you know, I lost a good portion of my leg, but compared to what other people were going through, it wasn't that big. It's hard to sort of like
wrap your
unless
head
you're
that.
In your position. It like from my perspective, that's a hard. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, you don't know unless until you're in it, and then you know, going to like inpatient rehab to train with a prosthetic. I was like the youngest guy in there, and I was like I saw people who were like, you know, just had strokes, and on, you know, they're on wheelchairs and they're in really bad shape. And I mean, I got off pretty easy compared to like you know what I saw in those places, right. You know, it really forced you to put things in perspective.
Well, it seems like I remember not last year, this was a couple of years ago, my friend Einar had a scare where he thought that he had kidney cancer. And like he just had it removed, but it turned out it wasn't it. Like they misdiagnosed him. But there is a certain, I think that now with our generation of people, there's like this, just fucking get it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like when you did your rounds of radiation, it shrank in 2012.
I had the tumor removed.
Oh right, I had surgery, and then you had,
but they shrank the tumor down. They like cut off the blood supply the night before the surgery. It was huge too. Right. It grew from like the inside of my left leg, and it wrapped around the back of my leg. And then it just got bigger over like 4 or 5 months, and they couldn't figure out what it was. I did like 3 or 4 biopsies. I had 3 surgeries.
Right.
And then they shrunk it down the night before the final surgery, peeled it out, and then like a month later I went and started radiation treatment.
Okay. And then so what was the final decision to have it?
Well, parts were benign and other parts had high malignancy. And so they would take a biopsy and then be like, oh, it's just benign. And then another one would have some bad cells in it. So it was like, it was like 3 different tumors in one. It was really confusing. But at the end of the whole thing, they were like, we need, whatever this is, we need to get it out.
Yeah.
And so that was good.
Yeah.
And
I remember that was your attitude when you told me that you'd gotten it done. You were glad, you were relieved, you were very happy about it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the longer with sarcoma, with my kind of cancer, it spreads to your lungs, and typically that's when it's just left in your body for too long. And then once it gets to your lungs, it's your days are numbered.
Right. Do you know where something like that might have come from?
I'm not quite sure. My birth mother, I'm adopted, and I found out in 2005 that I'd never met my birth parents, but I do have some information on them, and my birth mother had cancer, and she died of breast cancer, and so I think
not
I
very
just,
long ago, right?
Not too. It was 11 years ago. Okay. So I think I just had that in my genes and smoked cigarettes for a long time and quit right before I started going through all of this. And it was kind of perfect timing. I had some, there's a ranch back home and I was helping work cattle one winter, December of 11, I guess. And I got kicked while we were working. And I think that kind of exacerbated the whole thing.
Wow.
And it just got bigger over 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. And I remember one time at rehearsal, you were complaining because you were like, I tried to run today and I couldn't, there's something wrong with my knee.
Yeah. I had to sit down
after
a while if I was up for a, you know, for a while. And it was just one of those, it was just kind of painful.
Right.
And I remember when I would drink alcohol or eat certain things like sugar, I could feel the tumor just start to like get really,
really?
Yeah, it would get tighter.
So it would swell or something, or the area around it?
Yeah, it would just start hurting. But
man, I love the way these smell.
Isn't it great?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry. So you had part of your leg removed and you started going in. Were you in what's your hometown?
Albany, Texas.
Albany, Texas, right.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it started with an A. I was gonna say Alpine, but I knew it was wrong.
Right, almost. So,
that's where your family's ranch is?
Yes.
What did they ranch? Just horses and cattle and
horses and cows, hunt deer, quail, turkey. You name it.
You don't have a hunting vibe to me.
No, I don't. I'm terrible at it.
I don't see you as a guy that would want to, really.
I tried my hand at it, but it didn't work.
Did you get a lot of shit for that?
I was the worst cowboy too. Like I would go home and work during the summers, and I'd try to ride a horse and get bucked off, and they're like, "Man, you're worthless. Go pick rocks out of this wheat field." And that's what I did for a whole summer,
dude. That's what they'd put me. I'm not that guy. You know what I mean? I'm totally. There's a cowboy statue I have that was my grandfather's.
It looks like Tommy Lee Jones or something.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of guy you kind of want to be.
Yeah.
But it's really impossible for guys like us to be guys like that.
Yeah, we have no place doing that.
So in your time, you started writing the songs.
Yes.
And all this stuff was informing it.
For sure. For sure.
There's a lot of redemption. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of like almost like a Phoenix vibe to this album.
Oh,
you
cool.
know what I mean?
Thank you.
Not Dan Fogelberg's album Phoenix, but like the mythical bird.
Well, it just came out that way. I don't really know. It was, none of it was like premeditated. It was just what I had on my mind.
It very much feels like that.
And it just like, I just wanted to get out of the way of whatever was happening. And just let it speak for itself. And, you know, I was just wanted to make something that I thought would outlast me or something. I don't know. That's the idealist in me, but,
I know what you mean.
But they were just happening so fast. Like I was writing a couple of songs a week. And I have a little recording rig at home, and I was just kind of doing these garage band demos and just having a blast, you know, playing everything myself. And I was playing them out as a trio for a little bit before I made the record. And
who was in the trio?
Joe Hummel.
Right.
And a girl named Amy Hawthorne was playing bass. And we were doing like more electric versions of the songs, and a lot of them were just in the beginning stages, so... we developed them kind of over time, you know, after I kind of came out of the woods. But yeah, they've had an interesting life. They've certainly pulled me through a lot of stuff, and you know, I owe a lot to this record for sure.
Yeah, well, this record owes a lot to you.
Yeah,
because you had to live it to get it out.
Yeah,
you know. So what was the process then? You made these songs, and then I remember when you started to play with Alejandro,
mm-hmm.
and then you didn't, but were you playing him these songs and sending him these songs, or were you guys like forged a friendship where you were, stay in touch?
And... Yeah, we stayed in touch. I played guitar in his band, and we only did one show, but that one show was awesome. And from there, we we just stayed in touch, kind of emails and texts and the occasional phone call. And then we just kind of, I don't know, our paths kind of met when he did his Moody Theater show last January, right. January of 15. And then after the show, I was backstage and I was in a wheelchair and my mom was there and he was like, man, let's make a record. And I was like, what? You're kidding me. Nuh-uh. And then he was true to his word and, you know, I called him and I was like, hey, I've got these songs and, I'd love to just get your input and your advice on them. And then he just kind of took me under his wing. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's a great time to have that happen too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I guess he that's a guy that responds to like truth and art, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
If this record is nothing, it's the truth. If cool. It's one thing, that's what I mean. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you.
If it's one thing, it's definitely like your truth. It's like a, you know, that's why as your friend, mm-hmm. as a collaborator of yours,
yeah,
and as a fan, and then just also as a fellow musician, like,
yeah,
how do you make such a big statement? What are you going to make, like a dance record next or something? Like, what the fuck are you going to do?
I'm going to sing through a vocoder.
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, because it's such a heavy, I mean, I'm sure that you can continue on artistically.
Yeah.
But this is definitely a milestone album for you in every way.
Yeah,
it's almost like a coming out album for you because, to me, I mean, I don't compare it to your other stuff at all, but it definitely has a level of weight to it that the other stuff just didn't have.
Yeah.
And, I mean, unfortunately, you can't really have it unless you live through something
for
fucking
sure.
Horrible.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
And that's the kind of music that I'm drawn to.
Yeah.
As a listener. And so, I don't know. I was just really proud that I could just express what it was I was going through. And to have these musicians on this record was... It was so amazing. They supported the songs, the whole way through.
It's Bobby and Chris and the Mastersons.
Yeah, we as soon as we hit the first note, we did a couple of pre-production days at Space, and we hit the first note, and then that was just it. You know, there was no like shaping. Anything to like try to make it fit into this, I don't know. We just let everyone do their thing.
That's why you got everyone.
Yeah, because everybody had their own voice.
Yeah.
You know, they all have so much personality in the way they play, and they're total pros, and they're just perfect.
Yeah, and they're all, it's really creative, like on the spot creative.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure made... for a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's go to, cuz we did this, I'm sure I talk about this in the intro before this comes out, but for those of you that don't know, you were the very first person I ever interviewed for the show. You
yes,
were
sir.
Disappointed in your performance and I was ultra disappointed in my own. So, so this is like 480 episodes later.
Wow.
We're having this conversation. But let's go back to you. When were you adopted? When you were?
I was probably a week old.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't remember it.
When your parents are your parents?
My parents are my parents. For sure. They're amazing.
Yeah. When did you become aware that you were adopted?
I was probably around 4 or 5.
Oh, okay, so early on.
I mean,
it's not like you were
known.
Like 18 and came across some weird letter.
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'd always known. And I just got curious about all of that right around the time I was like 30. I'm 35. And I started getting just info about my parents, and I was always told, you know, whenever you want to find out about, you know, about all of that, you certainly can.
Right.
And I got these letters from my birth mother, and it was about 5 years ago, and they're amazing. They were written to me.
I remember when you got those.
As if I was gonna read them when I was 30. You know, it was very adult stuff.
And
it
wow.
It was amazing.
Yeah. How did did you? I could just imagine. I'm trying to think of like your parents' headspace, because they know that,
yeah,
you know, that must be a tough thing to nurture someone, take care of someone, and then they're curious about this other person. I'm sure there's a little bit of like nervousness about like,
yeah,
oh, what if they have this whole connection with
exactly
with this person that they never even knew they could have with a parent, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, wanting you to know and be for this,
they for seem sure
like, now I like them even more.
They're
just thinking
they're
about
so
that.
Amazing. Yeah. They've supported me every step of the way,
yeah,
through every, you know, just through everything I've ever done. And they've always stuck behind me. Yeah. And, you know, I never actually met my birth parents. I just got some information.
Right.
But, you know, they're my family.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And they'll never change.
All right. So you grew up on a ranch in Albany?
Not on the ranch. We grew up in town.
Okay.
We'd go out there in the summers to work when I was in high school. And, you know, just...
You'd have to go get rocks from the wheat field.
It's like, here, paint this cattle guard. pick up that rock. You know, I was just a skinny wimp.
But there's something great about doing that kind of like...
Oh, it's awesome.
You know, kind of work, ranching, painting, whatever it is.
It's humbling, for sure.
And it's real.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, super zen. To me, like, those are the things that, like, I can never get it together to clear my mind to meditate. Mm-hmm. But if you give me a whole bunch of dishes to wash, I'm real calm when I'm done. And I feel real clear, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So when did you, how did music come to you? I don't even know this. How did music come to you? How did you, like, what day, like, was there a day where you were like, I want a guitar?
I remember, I guess I was like 10 years old, and I remember the first two CDs I ever bought were Garth Brooks' Rope in the Wind, mm-hmm, and Metallica's Black Album.
Yeah, I mean, those were two staple albums at that time, right?
Yeah, and then, but then I heard like the Smashing Pumpkins and, uh-huh, Nirvana, and like the whole grunge movement came along, and I was like, oh man, electric guitar is the coolest thing ever.
What radio stations did you hear in Albany? Like what were
there? There were stations in Abilene.
Oh, okay.
And there was a classic rock station, and then there was like a top 40 station, and then they had a couple country stations. But I always went between more of like the, back when I first wanted to
play
guitar, yeah, I'd go between like rock and pop, you know?
Right.
And just whatever was on the radio. I mean, I don't think I was allowed to watch MTV, but I'd go to friends' houses and,
yeah,
you know, and that was like a whole, that was like Pandora's box.
Yeah.
But, Melancholy and Infinite Sadness.
Oh yeah,
that was a big one.
Yeah,
and then I remember hearing Paul Westerberg, because the Singles movie came out,
right?
And I remember that song.
Na 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 na.
Oh man.
Na 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 na.
Yeah. And I remember hearing it. I was like, who is that? That's perfect. And then I just couldn't remember who it was forever, and I didn't. It wasn't until I was like in Lubbock at like Ralph's Records.
Right.
And I was like 20 years old at school. I was like, oh, that's that guy who had that song in the movie. And then I discovered the Replacements.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, you know.
Yeah.
That's some of my favorite rock music for sure.
Yeah, that's great shit.
Yeah.
It's pretty unbelievable because that band was like so quintessentially rock and roll. Like they were always, like they were, half the time they were terrible, right?
They were terrible, but they have so many great songs.
Yeah. And I know that they must have been genius.
Oh, yeah.
But it was one of those like 50-50. Like they're so rock and roll, you just never know if it's going to implode, explode, or.
I got to see both versions. I got to see the shit Replacements.
Oh, really?
At the Riot Fest in Denver.
Oh, awesome.
And they came out wearing like long orange skirts and big felt cowboy hats, and they were all wasted, and Paul wasn't singing very well, and he played drums and he fell off the drum kit.
Oh.
The covered Kiss song at the end, but it was awesome, you know. And then they played ACL like a few months later, and it was just like song after song.
It's great.
Yeah, it was amazing. So yeah, there's that whole like dichotomy with that band.
So when did you start a band? I mean, did you get like an acoustic guitar first, or did you get an electric?
I got an acoustic guitar. Well, my friend George, who's my best friend that I grew up with, who did the photos for the record.
Oh, really? These are beautiful, by the way.
He sold me my first guitar, and it was like an Alvarez Strat copy.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I was just reading, you know, tablature out of books, you know, like guitar books.
Where'd you learn how to read music, though? Like, where'd you learn to read the tabs?
Well, I took piano lessons when I was like seven or eight, and I just kind of remembered stuff from that.
Right.
That was kind of short-lived. But so I got an electric guitar, and then I got into more like folky, kind of like Texas folk country songwriter stuff in high school.
Like who?
Like Steve Earle.
Oh, okay.
Steve Earle and Townes Van Zandt.
I mean, there must be some kind of cool shit that happens to you when you're like, look over and it's fucking Steve Earle's band.
It's ridiculous. In your band. I can't believe
it. You share a band. Now.
It's amazing.
That's so awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. So, and Steve Earle.
Steve Earle was a big one.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt and Joe Ely and Alejandro. And that made me want to play acoustic guitar and learn how to write songs and play acoustic guitar at the same time and be able to sing.
Right.
And it took a long time to figure that out.
It's not easy to do, yeah.
And that wasn't reading out of books. That was just from listening to records.
Right.
And that was just from just sitting around in my room, like, countless hours, just like G, C, D.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's folk music.
Yeah. there it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it went back and forth between electric and acoustic over a long time. But for writing songs, it was always acoustic guitar.
Right.
And for recording, I remember I had a demo, and I went to South Plains College in Leveland, Texas, and I started writing songs with my friend George, and we've always like, you know, been a good team.
Have I met George?
I think so.
Yeah,
it's been a few years, okay. But
I think shout out to George.
Yeah, what's up?
Keep it real.
Yeah.
Hey, good job on the album, by the way, George.
Yeah. So we started writing songs, and we had this little acoustic demo that we passed around Lubbock, and we started playing around town, and then we added a band after that, drummer and bass player, and we, you know, busted out the Telecasters.
And was that when you first played with the band?
That was when I first played with the band.
That's like when you first are like in the room and you get through a song.
Oh yeah. and you hear
that's
the
heroin we've been chasing the whole time. That literally
that's why,
is.
That's why we're still
high.
Here.
Yeah, that's the high I've been chasing since that picture when I was fucking 14.
Yeah.
At Kayla's birthday. I'm still trying to get that feeling. For something.
It's a never-ending chase.
No. Wow. So did you guys start playing out?
We started playing out. We only played in Lubbock, and I remember we played my dad's wedding.
Oh, really?
We played the reception, but they were all like depressing, sad songs, which is so weird. I don't know if they were like listening to the words. They're like, "Oh, we're just proud of them."
You're one of my favorite musicians and songwriters, but I'd never have you play like a wedding.
Hell no, I never would do it.
Post bummer time.
You need to get someone else to do that. It's a time and a place.
But you did it.
Yeah, yeah, and it was fun. We had a great time. We were writing and we were covering a bunch of different stuff, like a lot of like classic rock, like Tom Petty and Van Morrison, and you know, the hits.
Was that what you wanted to do? Or, I mean, you were going. What were you going to school for at the time?
Well, I didn't really know. I don't think I ever really knew what I wanted to do. I went to Texas Tech and I was studying ag business because I was gonna, you know, go into the family business and
sure.
do the agriculture thing. But
I mean, is that a big ranch? It supports your whole family and everything, and you just
yeah.
like wow.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big place. It's been our family for like over 100 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What's it called? Like the Nail Ranch?
It's called the Nail Ranch.
It is?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Can you go out there and hang out and have a good time without working?
Yeah, for sure.
Like you can, if you were like, I want to get away for a weekend.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of space.
Good. All right.
And it's beautiful out there.
Did your mom remarry?
She did. She remarried when I was 18.
Okay, but she's not with a... She didn't bring him to your show.
No. He passed away a couple years
later.
Oh,
he did? Yeah. I'm sorry.
But my dad remarried. But I forget where we were.
We were talking about your band and playing out.
Oh, yeah. Playing out. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Went to music school because just real school was just like, just weird. And... And so music school, I was like, yes, I can play guitar and sing all day. And yeah, this is great. And I just loved playing in a group, you know?
Yeah.
We had ensemble classes that we would learn songs together as a band. And we had we'd chart out songs. Learn how to do the Nashville number charts.
And oh, that's cool.
At the end of every semester, they would have like a festival, and it was kind of like their mini ACL, and it was like they had Country Fest night where all the country ensembles would play, and they'd film it, and it'd be on the public access channel, and
oh, that's cool,
and all that. Yeah, it was awesome, and so we started writing more songs, and I think the ultimate goal was to write, and to be a band and to make albums.
Right.
So we moved to Austin to do that.
What year was that?
2005.
Okay.
And then from there, we kind of all moved down here together, but it didn't really, you know, our thing kind of just didn't really happen when we moved here and we all kind of went our separate ways. We're all still buds. But
you found direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I started writing again and I wanted to just make a real record, you know?
You did, right? You made one with Stephen Doster.
I made one with Mark Addison.
Oh, with Mark Addison.
Yeah.
Can you make one with Stephen Doster?
We did three songs
okay.
with him.
Sorry.
It was going to be the follow-up to that first album, but it just never, for whatever reason, the second one didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then from there, I was just like, well, I want to be a sideman. I want to play guitar and I'd rather just collaborate for a while.
What about what was that? What was it about that? 'Cause sometimes like level of work and just...
I think it was just maybe the pressure of not having to be a front man.
Yeah.
And just to, like, just to have the experience of, like, you know, playing someone else's material. And I don't know. It was just, for whatever reason, that was just what happened for a few years.
Yeah.
But.
What were you doing? Who were you playing with?
I was playing with Dustin Welch.
Right. You were in that big band that used to sit in the big semicircle. That's when I first saw you.
Yeah, I did that.
At Momo's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I was in the Sideshow Tragedy for a while, playing bass. Yeah.
You were so good.
Thanks.
They just can't even, they could never even replace you. They just never even got another bass player. They just went without bass because of your genius that you laid on them.
They must be scarred for life.
Man, those guys are still kicking it. They play
They're
so
awesome.
Much. They were like the second show.
Oh, cool.
I think, yeah, second or third. But I don't know. Those guys are great.
Yeah.
So, did you still play with your own band, like, after you made that record some? Or just not really?
Yeah, just every now and then.
And that was Joe?
That was Joe. And starting off, it was Harmony Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Playing bass. And Chris Ware playing guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And then... Kyle Schneider playing drums, and that was a really fun band. And then after, so we did we re, that that was a band that recorded with Steven,
right?
And then we played for a little while after that, and then lineup sort of changed. Joe Hummel played drums. I remember doing a show with Jack Martin playing guitar.
Oh yeah, I love Jack.
A couple of times, and that was really fun.
Yeah.
And Justin Wade Thompson, who used to be in Sideshow Tragedy.
Oh, I don't think I know him.
He would play bass every now and then. So, and then Amy Hawthorne played bass for a while. So it was just kind of like a revolving door.
Yeah.
But you know, we're kind of playing the same stuff,
right?
For a while, so it was, you know, there kind of came a point where I was like, okay, I gotta fill the cup,
yeah,
and get some new things happening before anything's gonna happen.
Yeah, but you were recognized as like a songwriter. I mean,
yeah.
Other people, Mickey and the Motor Cars, covered your song. I mean,
yeah,
other
yeah.
people loved your songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Other songwriters.
Yeah.
Which must have been some kind of encouragement when you realize that if those guys like you, then...
Yeah, that was a great thing.
Yeah.
I think maybe I just... I get pretty hard on myself, and I just kind of... I don't know. I guess I lost faith in it for a while or something. I don't really know.
Well, you also don't have the kind of ego that needs to be blown all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you really don't have, like, a...
Thank you.
Yeah, you're not a jerk.
Yeah, well...
Not that that makes you a jerk, but it takes a certain kind of person to be like, me!
Yeah.
I can do it, and I'm kind of ashamed of saying that. Like, well, I guess that's part of my old trip. But, hey. I mean, when you and me and Casey played together, there was a distinct sort of, like, we were both like, and you're kind of like, all right, okay, guys, go ahead and do your fucking jazz hands all day long. You know what I mean? Which is, I mean, it's awesome. Both things are awesome, but it must be interesting to not have that burden to have to be fed by people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like if I can just write something that I like and that I'm happy to sing.
Yeah.
Then, like, that has to be good enough.
Yeah.
And then once it's there, then, you know, I love, you know, I can't wait to share it with people, and however people respond to it is, you know, that's not up to me, really.
No.
And all I can really do is just do the work.
Yeah.
And hope that it's good.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's that in a nutshell, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're a stellar musician, an amazing songwriter, beautiful singer.
Thank you.
Hey, I saw you thank me on your album. Thank you.
You're what? Thank you.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah. Thank you. You're welcome.
You sang great on
You're welcome.
You wrote me on your welcomes.
Yeah, you wrote me on your welcomes. did you have any? Were there any times when you were going to make this album that you felt a little bit like you? Like, was there ever, did you ever doubt? Or once it started going, did you,
no.
Like, the way that I mean, did you doubt it is like, because, I mean, you come, like, you're coming clean with everything on this record.
Yeah.
And that's what most people want to do and say they want to do, but that's a hard thing to do when you know.
Yeah.
I mean, to totally open yourself up and just be like, here it is, folks.
Yeah, you know.
The good, the bad, the sad.
Yeah, and if, from, you know, everything that happened and everything that, like...
You never had a moment where you went, like, I'm saying too much? Or did you ever say to Alejandro, hey, am I saying too much here?
Yeah, and he kind of, like, helped guide me through that.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't all like, well, it's got to be, you know, this is it, boys.
Yeah.
There was definitely some conferring. And then, you know, there are still some times where I'm like, man, did I really say that?
Yeah,
well,
that's out there.
I did.
Yeah.
And that's what I had to do in the moment. And that's what, you know, records are like, you know, you're capturing a moment in your life. And that's what it has to be.
But it's awesome because you didn't like... You didn't catch, there has to be feelings of desperation that you're going through those times. But that's not really what's captured as much as the feeling you have when you come out of something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Right.
I mean, I really feel like there's hope.
Yeah.
There's like, it's extremely heavy, but it is these things. And I feel like when I was listening to it, especially today, I was listening to it on headphones. I listened to it two times through and thought, this is like something that would help anybody going through anything challenging or life-changing. Here's like a record you can kind of hold on to and be like, all right, well, if this guy fucking, you know.
Yeah.
If this guy can end up feeling like this through shit, then maybe I can too.
Yeah, for sure. And that really feels good to hear you say that.
It's true. Like there's a real like healing...
That's what I wanted it to serve.
Yeah.
You know? That if someone can connect to it like that, like just the way I did making it.
Yeah.
You know, that then we did our job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people, like the general public hasn't heard it yet, but I know that the people that have, like respond to it, like really respond to it. Like, oh, shit, man, this is a special album.
Thank you.
That's why it's going to be hard to get that message across on your dance record. I'm sorry. I felt like it was getting really heavy in here and I had to break the ice.
That's great.
Break the tension.
That's great.
But, yeah, I mean, those are the things that I was trying to get at the beginning of this is like how, like, I just, you did an amazing piece of work, but to the neurotic person inside of me would just immediately start thinking like, how am I ever going to do that again? And then what am I going to do next? Like the vapid, like, I can't even think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that'll just come when it comes.
It will come.
You know?
And do you feel like you're on a, like, okay. So this album comes out on May 3rd, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Comes out on May 3rd. You're doing a release show Friday, May 6th at Strange Brew.
Yes.
How did you get a Tuesday? Because I thought records came out on... There's a couple other people that have been here that record comes out on Tuesday.
And that's weird because I didn't know...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I didn't know about the whole Friday thing.
I didn't either.
And then I'll go to Waterloo Records the other day and I'm like, well, should I change it to Friday? And the ladies are like, dude, you can put a record out whenever you want.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, who cares?
Okay.
If it comes out on Monday or Wednesday or...
And I used to work in a record store and every Tuesday was the release day.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
And let it build up for a few days, and next, the dance record's going to come out on Friday, for sure.
Well, of course, you can't put a dance record out on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
when no one can go out that night and dance. So you're going to do the release show with the band?
With a band, yes. Okay. With Chris Masterson, Eleanor Whitmore, Bobby Daniel, and Chris Searles.
Yeah. You know, I see Bobby Daniel on the trail.
He never stops running.
He doesn't. I see him on the trail, and he does not stop to fuck around and say hello.
You know, he ran 100 miles recently straight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jesus. He's a runner. You know what's funny is when you see him play, he looks really rock and roll, like a guy that wouldn't run.
Yeah. No, he's a jack of all trades.
Yeah. Is he still playing with Alejandro?
I don't believe so.
Okay. All right, so you'll be doing this show with the band at Strange Brew.
Yes.
And then do you have shows planned after that?
There's going to be some touring this summer.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. With who? Do you know?
I think there's going to be a run with Alejandro.
Great.
And then we're going to make a run up to New York in July, I believe.
And are you going to do that with a band?
I think I'm going to take a trio out.
Okay.
And do more of like a stripped down trio thing. Bobby and Chris and I have been doing that the first Tuesday of every month at the Blackheart.
Oh, really? And you're doing them now?
We're doing them now. And we're
you'll be doing one on the day the record comes out.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Okay. Because I don't think I can go to the release show, but I can definitely go to that.
Yeah, come to that.
Yeah, the first Tuesday of every month. You like playing there? I like
yes.
it there.
It sounds great in that room.
Yeah.
It's and for doing like a stripped down thing, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And I've been so into just playing acoustic guitar and just doing it for the songs.
Yeah.
I mean, having those guys around me is just. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's great.
They're great musicians. I might have told you this a long time ago. I heard about Twang Twang Shaka Boom, mm-hmm. like, I said 1990 or something. And I had a friend that was so into them, and he was like, dude, we're going to drive up to Austin and watch them play on, you know, do their busking thing.
Yeah.
I lived in Houston at the time. I drove up here and saw them and then went to the Hole in the Wall and saw their show that night. And came back that night, and I was like, those guys were like, I know that they were like a year or two younger than me, but like when you're 22 right. and some guy's 20 and he's like, you're like, I don't even know what he's doing. Like right. any of those guys, really.
Yeah.
Jeff, Chris, or David, like, I mean, they were better than any musicians that I had ever seen in our age bracket. You know
what
I mean?
Didn't they have scholarships to UT at the time at the music
school
there?
You know what? I don't even know.
I think so.
I mean, I can see Chris having one.
I think David as well.
Yeah.
I think that's what he told me. Yeah, they're incredible.
Incredible musicians.
And they just kept progressing.
Yeah. Yeah, and Chris is so great to watch. Some of the stuff that he did on the record, you can just tell that he was doing it off the cuff, and it just feels
yeah.
so good.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
he is such a...
He has the right touch.
Yeah.
And for the arrangement we had, and for the especially like the space between the drums and the upright bass,
yeah,
like the him and Bobby just have this thing,
yeah,
and it's really nice.
There's something elegant too about the instrumentation of it. There was a I remember when I first talked to when you were telling me that Alejandro was going to do the record, and I think we were like at Continental Club or something, and then he said, "Yeah, we're going to make a record like Donny Hathaway."
Yeah.
And that was like, it was such a strange, you know what I mean? Like when you know you and someone's like, oh, we're going to make this Donny Hathaway record. You're like, oh, really? But I understand once I heard it. You
if
know
Donny
what I mean?
Hathaway was from Winters, Texas. It could happen.
If he was a failed ranch hand. I don't mean to refer to you as a failed ranch hand.
No, it's perfect. That's cool. I didn't know he said that.
Yeah. I mean, I for some reason I thought he said it a couple of times to me, even like that day that I went to record with you.
Yeah. We were talking and we were just messing around with the songs and just going through the arrangements and talking about how he wanted it to sound. And it was going to be originally, there were going to be no electric instruments on the record. It was going to be all acoustic. And I thought that was great because, you know, I was just wanting to do something like that, where it was really intimate, everything was up close, and, you know, I just heard this quiet record.
Yeah.
These songs kind of lent itself to. But then once we started rehearsing, I remember we got through one song like that. And I'm like, well, let's try electric guitar.
Yeah, because you can, textually, it kind of, it doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to be a rock album.
Yeah, it can still be that, but like it have a different.
And that's what's so great about Chris, the way Chris plays. He plays so intimately.
Yeah.
And there's never too much of anything.
No.
And it's just the right amount of space. And it's, you know, it ended up totally exceeding what I thought was going to happen.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, that really, you did that, didn't Jim Scott mix this record, right?
Jim Scott mixed it, yeah.
Did you go there when he did that?
I went there. Yeah. And when I talked to him at first, I was like, well, he suggested, he was like, you need to be here while we mix, cause it's just going to go better.
Faster. Yeah.
And so we went out there and it's in Santa Clarita, north of LA, which is kind of great. I'd never been to LA before.
Oh really?
And it was awesome because you're kind of removed and you're just in the studio. There's nothing. There's not many distractions, but it's a beautiful space in a big warehouse, and there's just all of these amazing tapestries on the wall.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures.
Really tall ceilings and the coolest record collection and great amps and guitars and just instruments everywhere. And it's just like an amusement park, and. And just, you know, having getting to kind of pick his brain, and, you know, I totally fanboyed out, you know, just like, oh, what was it like? Oh, yeah. What about Tom Petty? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and got to hear a lot of cool stories.
Yeah. That's cool when the guys like that are late, and I guess they do, you know, they sit there while
they
work,
all
so it's
time.
Nice to, it. Yeah, but you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they mixed. They mix really fast and just had a great workflow and were just so cool.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they did a great job.
Yeah.
They put a lot of the backing vocals and guitars through an Echoplex when we were mixing. He doesn't use any plugins.
All right.
And so everything's real natural.
That's what
you know?
I like about, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with all that stuff, but it's just nice to know that there's still people
that are working like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
And they just, every song, man, we would go out to the car and drive around and listen to the mixes, but most of the time, the first time was like, oh, well, that's it. You know, he's Jim Scott. It sounds great, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you, did you do any recording? Like any additional, like, did you do anything when you were there?
We didn't record there, no. But we had some leftover songs.
Okay.
Probably about four or five.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go ahead and mix those?
We mixed a few. We mixed two or three. And we had an alternate version of My Mountain that sounded like the Stooges. And it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nuts. It was the last thing we recorded. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but we were like, well, maybe we can stick that on the end of the record. But then it kind of like took away from the whole thing. We just kind of did it for fun.
There's such a, there's a very, confident calm. I was trying to figure out which word to put first in that description, but
Thanks.
There's a confident calm to that record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the only way I can describe it, and it's like one of those weird, sexist dirty jokes that your dad tells you, where the bull and his son are standing at the top of a hill, mm-hmm. and the And the son goes, "Oh, Dad, let's go down. Let's run down there and fuck one of those cows." And then the dad says, "No, let's walk down there and fuck them all." Is your mom going to listen to this? She's maybe. Been on a ranch.
Yeah,
come on.
She knows the deal.
Are there any hills out there? But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like there's a confident calm. Like you guys, there's, you know, and I'm sure having Alejandro, who is a confidently calm man.
He has that presence,
and so are you.
For sure.
It really comes through. It makes there's nothing forced on you on that record. It's just very like you're getting it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I wanted it to feel real natural.
Yeah.
And not I didn't want it to feel indulgent.
No, it's not indulgent at all.
And mainly that came from just having a lot of space in the music.
Yeah.
And once everything started to find its space, then the vocals, I could really play around with the vocals, and I'd always sang real loud.
Right.
And had blaring electric guitars around me.
Yeah.
And all of this like production. And then this was just like, okay, can we just like come up for air and just breathe?
Yeah.
And you know, and that being said, we cut the record really fast. Like we did most of it in 2 days at Boyle's at the church house.
Right.
And so I don't know, we just had a great groove and
did he engineer it, those parts?
David engineered it, and then we did and then we took it to Pat Mansky at the Zone, and that's when he came out.
Yeah.
And we did a re-sang a couple of things. We cut the last two songs on the record out there, and then we put Eleanor played violin, and Stephen Barber played piano, and Dana Falconberry sang, and Jazz Mills sang as well.
I love her.
And me too.
I haven't seen her in months. I know she has that company that she was doing stuff.
Oh, she is an
industrious lady.
She's a workhorse.
Yeah.
She helped make the video? Two videos for me.
You're going to release another one?
There's another one coming up that looks like an Ingmar Bergman movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
intense black and white.
Totally. We filmed it on this muggy day in Port Aransas when it was...
Tell me about that.
It was in December. It was really just cold and creepy. And it was like, yes, that's what we want.
That's cool. And, when is that coming out?
I think in June sometime.
Okay.
What
song is it for?
New Frontier.
Okay.
That's
a great song.
Thank you. But the way we made the videos is a lot like how we made the record. It was like, we have this idea, and let's just go down that road and see what happens. And nothing with the My Mountain video, we just took off on 183 out towards my hometown. We're like, well, we're just going to find some random stuff. And we found all these old buildings and cool just things in small towns that are really run down. And then there was a scene where there's a swimming pool out at our place, and there's a snake curled up at the top step of the pool. Yeah. And then there's a rat or a mouse that comes up the steps and gets right next to him. And that was just how it happened.
Yeah.
And they just sat there and nothing happened.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That's pretty cool, though.
It was awesome. Yeah. We're like, man, we're going to get this snake eating this mouse.
No.
But no.
No, sometimes the snake doesn't have to eat the mouse.
We're coexisting.
Yeah. You know, people have responded so positively to this record, and there's something I've been wanting to tell you since the day after the awards. I talked to Kyle Crusham on the phone, and he said, oh, man, I went to the awards last night, and I was like, oh, yeah, how was it? He goes, two words. Obviously, I think he's going to say, like, Robert Plant or something.
Yeah.
He goes, Jeremy Nail.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, you were the best thing that night for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. He was like, it doesn't get more real than that, is what he said.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that
was great.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you. That you did this.
Thank you.
And that it's at such a strong, it's just so powerful. I mean, you made a powerful piece of work.
Thank you.
And that's worth it.
For sure.
Whatever kind of hard shit you have to go through to be able to turn it around.
Oh, totally.
And make something out of it. That means something, not just to you, but I do feel like this is something that could help people get through something.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, just because you're honest about your own experience, you know?
Yeah, that's felt like that's how it needed to be.
Yeah.
And it feels good to have something to offer.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel good.
Yeah.
And all right, so where are you going to go on tour this summer? So these people, they can find you at jeremynail.com.
Jeremynail.com. You can follow, you can send a like over to the Facebook page.
Of course. Also follow you on Twitter and Instagram.
We can be friends too if you want.
How do you feel about social media? It's not your medium.
Man, it you know, for some it's great. I mean, I don't know. I'm not the biggest self-promoter in the world. But the great thing is you can promote whatever you're trying to promote. And you can, you know, get people into your stuff. And I don't know. It's all good, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, hopefully we'll be getting some radio play for these songs. You were saying you got a little play in, did you say...
The Netherlands. Played Dreams, the song that
that I sang on.
That co-stars Johnny Gowdy co-star. Himself. And that's right. And they got played on an Americana station in the Netherlands, I think yesterday. Maybe.
How do you find out about that? Someone said something?
I have a publicist.
Oh yeah.
Who's amazing.
Oh, who's that?
Her name's Bernadette Quigley.
Okay.
And she sent me an email about that this morning, so
where is she? Is she in...
She's in New York City.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And, it would be awesome to go over to Europe. I'd love to do that. We'll see. I know that there's going to be a tour probably hitting, Nashville and New York City and going up, like, the East Coast probably in July.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to make my way out west later on in the summer when it gets too miserably hot, and so I can avoid that.
Yeah.
We'll see, you know?
Yeah. You've made an amazing album.
Thank you so much.
You have your work cut out for you now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fun.
Now the work begins.
Yeah. But it's worth it. You got, at least you're not hawking something that you're like, oh, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Sorry about the third song. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You've got something that you can be 100% proud of and like...
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a moving piece of work that people are already responding to. So people can... The record, when this show will come out May 3rd.
Oh,
the
awesome.
Day that the record comes out. So you can get it today.
Cool.
Go to the record store if you're in Austin at Waterloo, or go to jeremynail.com. I'm sure it will be on iTunes,
yes.
On Spotify. But I suggest buying it. Try and buy. Did you do a Kickstarter? You just did not do a...
I didn't do a Kickstarter. I just did it.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were talking about how great it is and how awesome Kickstarter is, and that all these people mm-hmm. were giving them like $25 and $30 and all this stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome, but I don't understand why people don't just pay $10 and buy the album. Like when it comes
yeah, out, it seems like, pretty simple.
Everyone seems so stoked to give you $50 to make your album.
But it's like all you gotta do is really, it'll be cheaper for you if you just go on iTunes.
So much cheaper.
Yeah, you don't have to do all this.
Yeah, yeah. But, and do you have plans to do vinyl?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Gonna do
vinyl.
Oh yeah,
vinyl. That's right. You told me that. Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna be a
while.
Because
it's.
It's going to be, it might be available after the release, depending on, they're still at the press plant.
Okay.
But it's going to be on vinyl.
That's
for sure.
One thing that I've kind of gone through with all of the guests over the last few years on this show is like, that like vinyl adds like an extra 9 months to your time to release an album.
Yeah. We'll see. Hopefully, it sounds great on the test pressing. So hopefully people will be into buying that too.
All right. Well, people can find you at jeremynail.com. They can find you on Instagram, on Twitter. Do you have music on SoundCloud regular, or was that just a private link,
but that will be public the day of the release.
All right. Well, look, this is coming out the day of the release. Just get the album.
Yeah.
I promise you it's worth it. It's not, write me. I'll give you your money back. I'll buy it because I believe in it. I really do. And I love
you
so much. And I don't know. I'm just really proud of you. I knew that you would make a great album. I just didn't realize how on another level great you were going to make it. You know what I mean? Like it sort of transcends just like, oh, a great album. You know what I mean?
Thank you so much.
Yeah. You really made a special.
Thank you.
Piece of work.
I'm really proud of it.
You should be.
Thanks for
Man, I'm honored to be on it.
Well, I'm honored to have you.
I'll be, I was going to say something funny, but I couldn't even think of something. I do. I love and care about you so much. I want you to know
Thank you.
I went to the Mohawk the week before that show.
Uh-huh.
Did I tell you that?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I was at this thing for the Austin Music Foundation, and all these people were talking. I was like, oh, this, come on down. It's going to be Jason Blum, Jeremy Nail, the Mastersons.
Yeah.
Let's go down there. And so me and AJ Vallejo and this guy, Daniel Eyes, went there.
Wow.
And I'm like, what time does Jeremy play? And I'm
No,
it's not. And then I look in the thing. I look on Facebook, and I look at this guy. So I was like, hey guys, I'll pay for the Uber to go to Oklahoma if you want to go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I missed it the next week because I was playing.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, how was that show? Good?
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. Kind of late for Wednesday night. Yeah. So, you know, it was a little bit thin, but it sounded great.
Well, you guys sounded great at the Townsend that night.
Thanks. Yeah, I love that place.
That is a great place.
Yeah, we'll be back in there this summer sometime for sure.
Good.
And then, yeah, we'll be around.
All right. Hey, everyone, pick up Jeremy Nail's My Mountain at jeremynail.com on iTunes. Out today, May 3rd, 2016.
Yes.
Love you, man.
I love you, too. Yeah. Thank you, Johnny.
My mountain, the wind begins.
One of my favorite people in the whole world, Jeremy Nail. Pick up his album, My Mountain, comes out tomorrow, Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. Go to jeremynail.com for all you need to know about him. Great job, everyone. Alejandro, Chris Searles, Chris Masterson, Eleanor, Bobby, everyone did a great job. All right? Go to his release show this Friday, May 6th at Strange Brew if you're in Austin. And I believe the band will be playing with him there too, so that'll be great. Do it up. My Mountain by Jeremy Nail. Buy it. All right? Thank you so much for listening to this show. Don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and also Stitcher. So you will get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. Sometimes a special one comes out on Monday, like today. Well, let's hear another song from Jeremy Nail. This is Dreams, and this is the song I got to sing on. So this is from Jeremy Nail's album, My Mountain. I'm singing with him on this song, Dreams. Thank you, Jeremy, for having me on the album. Thank you for coming by. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great week. Let's get down.
Second chances, I finally see the light. The best things come from a higher place. You no longer have to fight. Don't listen to that devil trying to test.
dreams come at night. Dreaming about you, honey, and that's all right. I said dreams come in the morning. Dreams come at night. Dreaming about you, honey, and that's all right.